صارت ترويع الشعوب شعار مجد وانتصار، هل صارت فخر الأبرياء وسام عز وافتخار.
Good afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan, and thank you for joining me for the 15th edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During this show, we visit with individuals regarding their stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. Today, my guest is Sarah Mahdi. Sarah is a young woman who left everything she knew in Iraq and moved to Maine a year and a half ago. Welcome, Sarah.
Hi. How are you, Kate?
Very well, thank you.
Thank you.
So glad to have you here today.
So glad to be here.
So can you tell us a little bit about what it was like growing up in Iraq? Where were you born and raised?
Well, I've been raised in Baghdad, the capital of Iraq, in a small area, very beautiful area called Al-Atifiyah, number two. And it was really a beautiful experience, and the area where really was really nice, and people there are really like your family. All your neighbors are your family.
Close neighborhoods.
Yes, it's a close one. It was a close one.
And are there big families that live near each other as well?
Yes, big families used to live together and close to each other to support each other. And if you need like something, you would go to your neighbor, and the head of the house would help you, and the entire family would be there for you, like your own brother and sister.
That's wonderful. It must have created a very safe feeling environment.
Yes, it did. It's really like you feel like you live with your big, big family, and everybody can be there for you in case you need something.
Wow, that's beautiful. What was your schooling like as a child in Baghdad?
Well, the schools, they are really nice, and usually close to the house. So I used to walk to my school, the elementary or the secondary. But the high school, I moved to a further one. I just wanted to be close to my relative. I had like a close friend, so I wanted to go with her to the same school. So I went to a further one in another area. And the schools are like different, definitely different from here, especially the high schools. And but it was like a good experience. I wouldn't trade it with anything.
Different in a very serious way, correct?
Yes.
Really more strict. That a little bit. Much more strict.
More strict. This is definitely the strict side is really like, now I can see the difference when I came here. I say, oh my God, they are having really good fun in the school. They have fun classes, art, and there wasn't any there. Like, you have like an art class, but it's not really an art class. Any other ones, like you have to choose from the secondary school. When you graduate, you have to choose if it is going to be scientific or non-scientific one. And if you choose the scientific one, it's going to be only science classes, and that's it.
So Sarah has a bachelor's degree in
information technology.
Information technology. From University of Baghdad, or?
From Technical College of Management, and it's located in Baghdad. Mm. It's a 4-year school, and also strict, as we mentioned, the university is also strict about the education. And I think there is a good side and bad side in this educational system. Like, you gain more knowledge, you know more, you go deeper in the science. This is a good side for the student to be more strong with the field that he or she choose. But at the same time, the bad side is that you have to have fun with your study and to have some funny classes to enjoy. But we did not have this.
Sounds pretty serious. And you were saying earlier that your whole grade depended on your final. There was no collecting grades as you go along.
Yeah, some classes like you can have 40% of your grade or 30% of your grade is going to be collected during the entire year, which is 2 semesters. not like here semesters, entire year. And like 30% of the grade is going to be depend on the entire year. And the 70%, sometimes 80%, going to depend on the final one. So basically, it's all about the finals.
You either know it or you don't know it.
Exactly.
And depending on your score, you can study one thing or another, right? If you don't have good enough scores, you'll never get to be a doctor.
It depends on the final year in high school. It's the sixth grade that we call it there. It's 12th year. We call it six in high school. And in that year, you're going to have a final exams, and it's going to be all depend on that examinations for all the classes you took for that year only. And then you would take the grades, and those grades would be entering in a system that will get you to the class, to the school and the universities, not you or what you want, which is really that was like a bad side, because sometimes you get picked for schools that you don't like.
Well, that would be difficult to realize the rest of your life you're going to be doing something different than what you had hoped for yourself.
Yes, that's difficult for a lot of students. You know, for me, I felt sad when I get to the school in the beginning, when I choose to go to the Information Technology Management and Technical College of Management. When I get to that school in the beginning, I felt so sad, and I also cried the day that I knew that I'm going to go to this school. But after I went there and get to know friends there, I start to like it. And it was really a very beautiful experience, and now I'm really grateful for it. So I don't know. And somehow I felt that I'm lucky that I get to that school. I get very beautiful memories. I knew the best people in the world, and I get the knowledge of a very interesting field.
Yes, coming with information technology to any field is really going to make you a strategic choice. So your English is very good, and you just arrived a year and a half ago. How did your English get so good?
Well, my English get trained by myself. Mostly back home, English classes is something that the child should have. They don't get to choose to take it or not. They have to take it from elementary schools and get to step by step till they graduate from high school. So they have to take it. And as a Iraqi student, I had to take English classes too. But the focus on the classes were like about grammars mostly, not about the conversations. So if you need to grow your to develop your conversation skills, you need to develop it by yourself. So basically, this is what I did, and I took advantage of the summer time, any free time that I had, because I loved the language, and it took me 4 years to get to be fluent. And I love it. I love the language, and I still love it when I talk with English.
What were some of your tricks for getting more the conversational language?
Well, I know the grammar deeper. I took a book from Oxford University about the English grammars, because you cannot make a conversation if you don't know how to form a sentence. So I get deeper in the grammar in order to know how to do how to start the conversation, how to end the conversation, how to open any subject with anyone. Then watching movies, shows in English, so that, and without subtitles in Arabic, so that develop the hearing side. Also, when you hear the language more and more and more, you get to be familiar with words. And then, of course, the dictionary. I get to read the dictionary, I write notes, I get the stickers everywhere, step by step, till I get it to be done.
Wow, that's really a lot of commitment.
It is.
I think it sounds fun watching the movies.
It is.
So, tell me about your family. Did you come from a large family?
Well, my close family, we are four girls and one boy, and my father and mother. My father died in 1998, and so we are 4, 1, 5, and 6. Relatively big family, I don't know. It depends on the standards, but we are, my sister is the bigger one, the older one, sorry, is in Canada. And I have one sister, she stays in Iraq, she's not going to come. And I have my sister here with me in Maine and my mother here in Maine. And we are waiting for my brother to come to Maine. He's waiting for his departure time. And there is a couple of stuff he has to do with for immigrants processing.
Did you all come at the same time?
No. We wish.
Who came
it
first?
It did not happen this way. The first one who came is my sister. And then I came after her with a month and a half. And then my mother came after me with 4 months.
So your sister helped with the crash landing.
Yes, she was the first one that came. But we had a friend here, and they took her in their house. They helped her to get familiar with Maine and with everything that she has to do to adapt to the new situation.
That's really helpful to have someone here.
Indeed, yeah.
And over 1.5 million Iraqis have left Iraq. Some have returned, but people are pouring out still. And of course, with this week's difficulties, there are more refugees leaving Iraq. What's that like for you to know that people back there are in a state of imbalance? Excuse me, imbalance.
Well, it's really hard. I thought, or anybody would know a person who left, they would think that they are lucky to leave. But I guess you are lucky for a certain level, but you still have, you safe and you feel yourself that you are safe now. But what about people you left? Your friends, your relatives. And now, for me, my sister and my brother are there. So even if I'm safe, it's not fully safe, because part of me, because my family is part of me, and they are not safe. And the situation, as you can hear in the news, is really unfortunate, and it's really hard to enjoy being safe while you're family still there, and your friends or relatives, and in any minute they can die, and you wouldn't know, they wouldn't know, and it's just like unfortunate situation.
Sure, it's all twisted together, the guilt probably from being the one that got to leave, and then the sadness, and then the safety and relief all
yes
mixed.
It's a tricky, and especially with my brother trying to come, and the process get complicated, and we are trying our best to work with the immigrant institutions in the States to help him to get here, because he already have the case and he's with us. But it's been like me, it's been 1.5 years I'm here and he's still there, which is really like make it like it's funny, because we came here because he's in danger. But still, like, we are trying to work and cooperate with the immigrant institutions here to try to fix whatever it needs to be fixed to get him here.
So was he the catalyst for your family leaving Iraq?
Yes.
And when did you have a sense that you all should leave Iraq?
Well, it all started before we came, 3 years before the departure time for my sister.
So which would be about 5 years from now?
It would be, she'd been here like 2 years, with 5 years from now, yes. It's 2009. And because the situation did not get better, it's actually getting worse. So, and with the all the situation being dangerous on all of us, and so we discussed it as a family that I think that's enough. We thought that it's enough, that we need to leave, because you either leave or die. There is no third solution. So we agreed, the four of us, to leave. So we start to do the processing, which took like 3 years. Then my sister came, and then the.
It's a long process when you're not feeling safe.
Exactly, yeah, it's a long one.
You are listening to WMPG, Southern Maine Community Radio, broadcasting from USM. I'm Kate Manahan, and this is New Mainers Speak. If you are just joining us, welcome. Today I'm having a conversation with Sarah Mahdi, who is originally from Iraq and moved to Portland 1.5 years ago to join her sister, and has since been joined by her mother. There's a large Iraqi community here in Portland, is that correct?
Yeah, large. community of Iraqis.
I had heard at one point last year we were receiving just as many Iraqis as Somalis, and I think people in Maine know that we have a larger Somali population than almost anything, but Iraqis are right up there, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah, they are, like, increasing, and they are receiving more immigrants, Iraqis immigrants.
And is there an organization here where you would join the Iraqi community?
Not an organization, but you can, like, see that there are areas, like, more Iraqis there. So if you live there, you're going to be in contact with them, and you can, like, you could organize your own community to go out together, to go to the beach together, and people know people, and that's how we get together to meet more Iraqis and help them in case they need something, and so on.
Be that neighbor from back in Baghdad.
Yes, yeah. Because we are used to do that.
I love that. I love that. More informal communities. So can you help listeners to understand what it might be like to leave everything behind that you've known, your culture, your work, your family members?
Well, I would say it was a really unique experience. I don't think that anyone can understand this experience unless they do it. I thought it would be a different one, but when I loved it, it was a different feeling, different situation.
What did you think it would be like?
I thought I would be happier. When I start the process to leave, I thought because of the bad situation, I thought it's going to be, I will be flying from happiness to leave everything behind. But when actually it happened and they picked me and they said, you're going to go in 2 weeks. And I actually went to my closet and to get to the stuff that I need to take and to leave the others and to call my friends to tell them that I'm leaving and I need to see them to say goodbye. Then I realized I'm not happy. I'm just like, and I couldn't understand what is the feeling that I felt. Is it sad? Is it surprising? Is it disappointed? What is the feeling? I couldn't understand what am I feeling. I felt why I'm leaving, and I did not want to. In that point, when I get to the point that I have to say goodbye to my friends, to my coworkers, to my classmates from the school and neighbors, and I had to say goodbye to my aunts and uncles, and I realized that I may not see them again because of the situation there. Maybe I couldn't go visit again. Maybe they will die in some situation. In that point, I realized, oh my God, I'm actually doing this. When that happened,
the reality is pretty heavy.
Exactly. When it happened real, I said, oh my God, I am actually leaving all of everything that I have to go there. But after I came here and I arrived and I started to adapt to the new situation and the new life and get to know it further and start to know that it's okay. It's like, it felt better, and I'm happy here. And to be honest, at the beginning that I arrived here, I thought I'm not going to stay. I'd rather go there and be in danger just to stay with everything that I knew my entire life. But now, no, I would never go back. Maybe just to visit, but not to go back and stay.
That's a big change in a short time. How long did it take from arrival to the point where you realized you might be able to make a life here for yourself?
About 6 months. Mm-hmm. When I start to apply to school and I start to explore my options and how I would be starting my life here, and I start to know that people in America are really nice, and the society here is the one that I want to stay in. I want to raise my children here.
What's your experience been like when you tell Americans that you're an Iraqi?
Well, for my experience, it's really a good one. And they all like Iraqis, and all the ones, because they notice my accent, so they ask, where are you from? And when I'm working, when I'm in school, I get to know, they get to ask me this question, where are you from? You have a very unique accent. And then I will say that I'm from Iraq. And I have some funny comments, and some of them are like more. They are all positive comments, and some of them apologize to me for the war, but I don't need an apologize. But it's still like thank you, but you don't need to apologize for anything. Mostly what I noticed that everybody is nice, like whether you are from Iraq or you are from any other country, they are nice. And I think being nice is the most wonderful thing, because if you're nice, you get to people's heart.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Were people not as friendly to strangers in Iraq just because of the heightened tensions there for so long?
No, I think they are nice, even if you're a stranger. But you know, if you... What happened, what I meant about like being nice here, they are nice there also. But you know, when you change everything and you move from a very different community, different culture, you don't know what you're going to face. You don't know what kind of people you're going to live with.
You're vulnerable.
Exactly. But when you get to know them and you found them nice, and you start to appreciate people being nice more.
What a relief.
Yes.
Yes, I get it. I get what you're saying. So what are you doing here in your life as you start over? I heard you mention school. Can you tell us about that?
Well, I'm in school now. I just transferred to USM for their pre-medical school program. And I'm going to stay here to finish the program. I have a year and 1 year and maybe an extra semester. And then I will apply to medical school. And my goal is to apply to Boston's medical schools. And this is for the schooling side. And I'm already working as an interpreter in a couple of agencies in Portland. And I love it.
And you have volunteer work that you do too as well.
Yes, I do. I volunteer with the very wonderful organization in Partners for World Health. And for the American Red Cross, and I also volunteer for Maine Medical Center.
You have a passion for healthcare, don't you?
I do.
Can you tell us a little bit about the Health Partners?
Well, the Health Partners are it's a very wonderful organization. They do collect the extra staff that the hospitals dispose. And some of them are really even new, but they dispose it for many reasons. So what we do is just take it from the hospitals and get it to the storage area, and then we get we open the packages and we get it to be organized more to put each one of them for the specific field. Like for example, the department for like the one of the sites would be for cardiology surgeries. One of them going to be for other staff, other like departments in medicine. And we have doctors on the fields to tell us what are these, because a lot of them we don't know what is it, because there are specific tools they use it in this specific surgery. And when you get organized that, and then we have a field team, they would go to areas all around the world who needs those equipment. And it's really very wonderful thing they do. And you can check their website to get to know, and you can donate to help them and or join us.
Do you know their website off the top of your head?
Yeah, it's Partners for World Health. You can write it in .org, and you can see, and they have a web Facebook page, and you can anybody can join them to be a volunteer, because all of the staff are volunteers, and they do wonderful jobs with, because what I think it's very unfortunate thing that in very poor countries, they fail to make any simple surgeries that would take 5 minutes or 10 minutes just because they don't have the right equipment to do that, which is really unfortunate. Like human souls being like lost, and they lost their patience. They not because they don't know how to do it, it's just because they don't
have the tools.
They don't have the tools, so they leave the person die, and they cannot do anything, which is really unfortunate.
That's tragic.
And it happens every day, every minute, a person die from this situation, very sad situation.
I love that they take what is considered our hospital waste. And sometimes, you know, if you've taken something into surgery, you don't even have to open it, but that cannot be used again.
Yes.
So those are the things they collect. Closed, sealed packages of gauze and things like that get
yes.
sent, put right in the hands of people who take it to their
exactly.
to the site where it's needed.
And they do make sure that it's safe and it's sanitized and safe to be used again. Some packages, sometimes it's open, they don't use it because they wanted to make sure that they get the things that are safe for other patients all around the world. Some of them get sanitized all over again just to make sure also it's safe to be used in a surgery or in a dressing a wound or anything.
Redistribution of resources. That's great. So what are your hopes and dreams here for your future, Sarah?
Well, my hope is, and my ultimate dream is to be a good person in the first place, a good human, and to help others. I still remember that I have like one thing that I keep always in my mind from Mother Teresa. And she said, the moment that we lose our lose the caring about each other is the moment that we lose our humanity. And this is, I think, my goal is I just want to help others. And I just wanted to do something, not only hope something would happen. I want to help humanity and help any human that need help. And that's what I really want in my future. And, of course, in my educational stuff is going to happen, and I want to be a good doctor that can serve humanity in a good way.
I think you'd make a fine doctor.
Thank you so much.
I hope all your doctor dreams come true, because I think you have so much to offer patients.
Thank you.
You have been listening to New Mainers Speak. I'm Kate Manahan, and I want to give thanks to my guest, Sarah Mahdi, for joining me here today.
Thank you so much for having me.